Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Gentlemen.
Are we in? Are we on?
We're all on.
Oh.
Am I on?
You're on.
This is going to be such...
I'm on!
I'm in! This is going to be such a pleasurable podcast. Thank you once again for listening. Let's just get straight into it. Hands in, a pod on three. One, two, three. Pod! It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We just love the game. We're three fans, we're three former players, teammates in some cases. And it's me, Tim. It's him, JB.
Hello, Tim.
And it's him, Phil.
Hi, Tim.
You can find us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. You can find us on iTunes, on Acast. Well, wherever you are, just find us. We're Egg Chasers. Subscribe. And then you'll get every episode delivered straight to you. Like, for example, this week, we've got a special bonus episode all about England-Australia, where we did a podcast with our counterparts from Australia, the Green and Gold Rugby Podcast. Some brilliant reviews been left on iTunes again, and thank you very much for that. I'm going to read some of them to you, boys. I think you'll appreciate these. Phil Rowe says, the cornerstone of rugby entertainment, dropping rugby truths harder than a James Haskell baseline and consuming, I consume this pod like Billy Vunipola eats up the yards. Love that. Thank you very much. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter, iTunes reviews. Thank you very, very much. You know what? Phil Rowe just mentioned cornerstones. Worth mentioning the finest razor
Makes
on
sense.
The market, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
If you like the podcast and you're a fan and you've heard us talking about Cornerstone, try it. So many of our listeners are getting on board and enjoying it. It was at the GQ Awards voted the best razor. So if you currently sit there with a Gillette razor or a Wilkinson Sword razor or a Aldi Own razor, whatever you have, you're using an inferior product. And for just £4, you could get a custom engraved premium shaft from Cornerstone. precision engineered German design, and you can get that for as little as £4 because you get a £10 discount because you listen to us and because we like you. So cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or
egg 10 at checkout.
Where to start, boys? Where to start?
Chronologically?
Yeah, go on.
Okay.
Sorry, Ireland fans. after your amazing moment.
Well, actually, that's a good point. Maybe we should start with Ireland.
That's it. Well, let's say what was the better result over the weekend? Was it England their first win in Brisbane, or was it Ireland winning in South Africa? What do you think was the most impressive?
When you consider that Ireland played 60 minutes with 14 men and 10 minutes with 13 men, I think the Ireland result has to be.
I think the Ireland result's historic. Actually, I don't think they've. I can't. In fact, I don't know when they last won in the Southern Hemisphere. Does anyone know this? If at all.
I don't think they'd ever won in South Africa before.
And South Africa's special because they've had some real battles there. In fact, one of my favourite ever matches is, I think, the Battle of, I think, Bloemfontein or whatever it's called. And it was just fight after fight
after fight. The Battle of Bloemfontein. Oh, it sounds so romantic.
Oh, and it is. It's every bit as romantic as I'm making it sound. So... for me, it's the Ireland result because they were just heroic. I mean, we talk about defences and structures and how organised these teams are. How do you prepare to face the Springboks with 13 men for 10 minutes? How do you prepare to do it for 50 minutes with 14 men.
Yeah.
You know, with all the, everyone's talking about overlaps and space. And these boys are monsters, absolute monsters. But the discipline, their game plan, I think actually the mental toughness to keep it tight and do sense and play sensible rugby when they had the ball was maybe the most impressive thing I've seen in ages.
I'll go along with that. I would temper it slightly by saying I don't think this was the best South African side that could have been out on the field.
Doesn't matter. I don't think.
They're a little bit rusty. No. I'm not trying to take anything away. Mm. Because what I was also going to say is to balance that up with is how many players are Ireland missing, and what I think is the most valuable element of this for Joe Schmidt is he's had a chance to see some players either playing in positions they don't normally play in, or playing at all. He wouldn't normally be playing.
He certainly saw a good 60 minutes of Andrew Trimble playing as a flanker.
Yeah.
that's not a bad option.
That's not a bad option. So he got to see these guys. And that's so valuable for Ireland because he now sees what they can do on the international stage. And I think one really good example of that is something that, Phil, you've been saying for a long time. And I've got to give you credit for this one. Jared Payne as a fullback. I thought he was absolutely outstanding. Could well have been, arguably should have been the man of the match. In his best position, coming into the line as an attacking threat, I just thought he was outstanding.
Oh, and the offload he gave for the Conor Murray try was something else.
Yeah,
you've also got to remember as well, the guy who I thought played exceptionally was Marshall. I thought he had probably his best game in any shirt.
He was great.
Yeah. Well, there was, because their performance was so important and they were all like so brilliant on the game line, in attack, their decision making. There's so many players who could have got that man of the match award. Paddy Jackson
was so good.
If it wasn't for that intercept, I think Paddy Jackson would have won it, because his kicking was so important. Not just his kicking at sticks, but his kicking out of hand to put the pressure back onto South Africa.
Definitely settles that debate, like Madigan, Paddy Jackson as the.
Yeah. I don't think Madigan was in the conversation.
I think he was.
No, you're right. He was in the conversation.
He was.
But Joe Smith's got this kind of habit of sticking with what he knows. You know, for instance, no Matt Healy. You know, just things like that. So for Paddy Jackson to come in and have that performance potentially is huge for him, because I think he's been better than Madigan for years.
Furlong, tight head prop as well. Can we talk about him? Like, I wouldn't say off the radar, but I didn't think he had that in him. What a prospect.
I don't think anyone thought any of the Ireland players had anything in them, quite frankly. I thought
I wasn't giving them much hope at the start of this game. When you look at the injured list for Ireland,
I wasn't giving them hope with 15 men, let alone 13. Heaslip rose from the dead.
Yeah,
I've not seen him play for best part of 2 years, but apparently he still can.
He definitely still can, based on that.
Tell me this, Luke Marshall.
Yeah,
I've never seen him play 12 for Ulster. I always see him in the 12 in the 13 jersey, usually with McCluskey at 12.
It depends how they play, because they've got so many good centres. They can play Marshall at 13, they can play Marshall at 12, and they can play someone like Cave outside him, or they can play him at 13 with Alden or McCluskey inside him, and you can put Jared Payne at 13 and put Marshall at 12. So he a bit of a utility in that regard.
And is Jared Payne good enough to keep Piatau out of the team now?
Piatau would definitely be playing somewhere. Where he plays, it doesn't really matter.
I think Jared Payne definitely is good enough to keep Rob Kearney out of the fullback shirt, which
we've been saying.
Which, Phil, you've been saying for a while. I've kind of not really taken it as seriously as you have, because Rob Kearney always seems like that real steady Eddie, solid player. But Jared Payne is an attacking threat.
I thought the same thing about Jared Payne. I thought he was like steady Eddie, can do a bit of 13, can do a bit of 15. Not very exciting.
No. He is. Wrong. He is the real deal. And it's almost been a shame that his first kind of dozen or so caps have come at 13, which isn't his natural position and isn't his best position. Because I think if you'd have seen more of him at 15 in a green shirt, you would, more people would know just how good he is.
Lots of pride Ulstermen and pride Irishmen.
Yes.
After that result. One Irishman who will have been proud and disappointed all at the same time, Irishman in inverted commas, CJ Stander.
Yes.
Right, I don't want to. I'm not going to go into.
No, please stop. Please stop.
I don't think we should cover for more than 2 minutes.
Exactly.
But I think it's worth mentioning.
All right. So I've on many previous podcasts gone into a big flat spin and a rage about red card decisions and referees not having empathy for the game and rugby going soft and accidents happen, etc. So all I will say is, firstly, sad to see any player get injured. Patrick Lambie. And yeah. Always a concern to see a player get hit a head injury.
Mm-hmm.
So completely, you know, it was didn't want to see any player, and you don't want to see Pat Lambie do that. But accidents can do and will happen in rugby. And when accidents happen, it doesn't always mean there has to be someone to blame by the very nature of an accident. Not every accident is caused by recklessness. And when it is reckless, I think it's right to deal with it. And we've differed on our opinions before.
Mm-hmm.
This, in my opinion, wasn't reckless. It wasn't dangerous. It was unfortunate. And I think what was really interesting is that Rory Best actually asked the referee when he was chatting to him, "Ref, are you just ruling on what happened?" And what he meant by that is, are you just giving a red card because the guy is on the floor injured?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you giving a red card because it was reckless and dangerous? And I think, had it been Paddy Jackson doing a charge down kick and just brushed Pat Lambie's shoulder, and probably Paddy Jackson was the one that got bounced off, I don't think that would have been ruled a red card.
No, I completely agree. It wouldn't be because he brushed his shoulder. I would say two things. One, when I saw it, I immediately said red card. That doesn't mean I want it to be a red card. That doesn't mean if I wrote the rules it'd be a red card. But when I saw it, I knew it was a red card. Which really is kind of all I've ever asked is consistency in the application of the laws. Secondly, do I want it to be a red card? No, not really. But on the other hand, there is a way to charge someone down, and it's not by turning your hip in and, you know, jumping in someone's face. You know, if you want to charge it down, I would argue that
you didn't jump into someone's face. That's
I think
a
he did.
Really,
that's exactly what he did.
That's
No, hold on. He jumped and
twisted his hip in someone's face.
Oh, fine.
No, that is talking.
I'm not getting into it. Pat Lambie was moving forward. CJ Stander was moving forward.
Okay, did his hip hit his face?
Right, that's a very different point.
Sounds like the same one to me.
No. That's a very different point and less emotive than he jumped into Pat Lambie's face. Did CJ Stander's hip and Pat Lambie's face collide? Yes, both players were moving forward, but no, he did not jump into his face.
I think you just described the motion of jumping in someone's face.
I feel like we're going back to the Joe Marler kick, not no kick.
Well,
I know that was a swinging shin forehead.
Well, yeah, sorry, not a kick to the head.
Right,
yeah.
Fine. At Rugby Podcast, give us your thoughts.
I think, do you know what? Tim, I think it's a coaching point. I think the coaching point is, Joe with the high balls now, they very rarely contest unless it's, you know, a really good chance.
Yeah.
They let them land and they hit them because it's a coaching point. Now, charge downs, if this is a dangerous thing, not dangerous to the individual, dangerous to the team because of a red card, they need to coach it differently.
Yeah.
And it's the same with the NFL. If you look at the NFL, holding penalties, that sort of thing, they coach around it.
I don't disagree. If that is going to get given a red card, then you might as well just not bother.
Well,
the lack of empathy, the game going a little bit soft, having to have someone to blame when accidents happen in a full contact sport.
Yeah, agreed.
I just think it's spoiling it for me. And fortunately, we're not sat here going, arguing whether it caused Ireland to lose, and arguably it was more heroic a result and more memorable a result because of it, but that doesn't mean I think it should have been a red card. I definitely don't.
Can I ask you a different question? Not do you think it should have been a red card, but do you think a red card was going to be given when you saw the incidents?
Based on what you've seen what you've seen in the past.
I'm not saying you think
it
should be a red card, which sounds like a ridiculously structured question, but did you think the ref was going to give a red card?
I thought he was. I was thinking, oh, he's going to give a blooming yellow card for that. That was clearly an unintended consequence. Both players moving forward. I just thought it was an accident play on. I'm really sorry. CJ Stander should have gone and shaken his hand as he walked off.
Very limp hand.
As he was being carried off on a stretcher.
So what you're doing is what Rory Best was asking the ref. He's like, are you basing the decision about what?
That's not what I've said.
Oh, he went and shook his very limp hand. Like, that's relevant. That's not the point.
No. I'm just saying that's right. What we would have done.
All right.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Because I want to get off this.
Yeah, let's get off this.
Quick question. If it was not his hip and it was his shoulder that was both late and high and connected with his head, what would you say then?
What do you mean?
If it wasn't his hip that connected with Lambie's head and it was his shoulder.
As in he was running at him?
Or diving at him. He got in the air, so he took it out of control. If it was his shoulder rather than his hip that had knocked him out, Would you say that's a red card?
Hold on. Do you think a player's any more in control when they're committed to a tackle but on the floor, feet on the floor, or committed?
Well, no. Feet on the floor. If you're in the air, if you're diving or jumping, you're less in control than if your feet are planted.
Do you know what? I want to get off it because it's just bugs.
I could do another 20 minutes. I could do another 20 minutes.
It bugs me about where the game has got to and the things we're talking about. And I can't. I'm amazed.
One thing, Tim. This is the only thing I would say on the issue. The fact, as long as I know what the rules are, it's fine because you can coach around it.
Laws.
Look, thank you. Oh, actually, important points. The South African referee in the Saxons game referred to the laws as rules.
Outrage.
Outrage.
you actually text me to say...
Phil!
You
Phil.
Pedant!
Yeah, but I don't think that was a referee... And I don't think that was laws being broken. I think that was player got hurt. We need to have someone to blame. There needs to be a reason why that injury happened. So therefore, there must be a red card issued because he got knocked out.
I agree with you that if he hadn't been knocked out, or if he just stayed on his feet or something, that wouldn't be a red card. And do you know what? I'll take this one step further. If I'm playing on like a soggy kind of pitch, you know, like quite a soft one, and someone touches me in the air, my preferential landing spot is somewhere between head and shoulder to get the other guy sent off. Now, in fact, I'd be running training sessions.
That's in the new laws brought in by World Rugby. That is a simulation.
My head, sir, my head.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? You're right. You can have your say on Twitter or whatever, but I've made my point very clear. I think you two have made your point very clear, and that's fine. And I'm probably just going to be a lone voice shouting in years to come. It wasn't like this in the good old days. So fine. I'd rather pick on the positives. And
yes.
There were lots of players over the weekend, and we'll get onto some others, that have defied critics. And Devon Toner has got a little bit of criticism from us and had a fine, fine performance. He's not just someone who's freakishly tall.
Yeah.
He's not just a BFG. He can play rugby.
Yeah. And I think... basically anyone that was playing in that Ireland game, I can't think of anyone who kind of stood out for... people made individual mistakes like the Paddy Jackson intercept, but the overall quality of the performance all around was absolutely superb, and everyone just kind of stood up. Heroic defence, intelligent play going forward, intelligent offence. The two halfbacks, Murray and Jackson, were absolutely superb. And also, there is another side to this. So Ireland were brilliant, but I do feel that South Africa almost played into their hands a little bit. They played what felt like either a very limited game plan, or when they did try and go wide, they made mistakes, and that might be because of the Irish pressure. But you would normally back a South African or any Southern Hemisphere side to beat a 14-man Northern Hemisphere side. Mm. And I think... As good a performance as it was from Ireland, and it was superb, there will be some massive questions raised in South Africa over their team, their tactics, the decision making, the quality of their play.
A couple of tweets on the Ireland win that came into at Rugby Podcast. One from Nick Jepson said, "Hooray, Ireland are as good as Japan. What a result." Derry Gasman says, "The Irish nation would like to thank England for the gift of Andy Farrell." And Billy Conkey on Twitter said, "The new Dean Carter's Rissing 92 is Andy Farrell's Irish defence."
Well, at least we know that Andy Farrell wasn't the problem now in the English setup.
Well, certainly not once certainly not when he's not got any influence on selection and just does defence.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good point, actually.
Hmm. And it was pointed out as well on Twitter that bench warmers, who are generally football fans, but they're like Irish sport website and people, they put a tweet out going, "Full time, 10-man Ireland beat South Africa."
How awkward.
On full time, when South Africa were pressing and you're just thinking, right, here comes the try. They're going to score and they're going to convert it, and it's going to be exactly like Ireland against New Zealand a couple of years ago.
Or South Africa, Wales in the World Cup, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
devastating.
And that tackle in the corner.
Oh, it kind of personifies it because they were all there. And you know when a team is really up for it because the tackles come in ones, twos, that you've got that extra step, you know, that extra string in your step to make the tackle, help out your mates. Happened at the end of the first half and the end of the second half. The end of the second half was arguably more important. Yeah, it was.
Definitely more important.
Yeah, much more important.
Just briefly going back to the red card, not talking about the red card, but one thing that did surprise me was it was a French referee, and with all the gouging and foul play he must see week in, week out, that's why it surprised me. It was absolutely outstanding, and rightly so. Ireland should be really proud, but like I think you're absolutely right, Phil, to point out that South Africa will be putting their team under the microscope.
Yes, definitely.
So we've done a special podcast just focusing on England against Australia with our Australian counterparts from the Green and Gold podcast. You can get that on iTunes as well on our Egg Chasers feed. So we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about obviously Wales, New Zealand. But so how about we just quickly rattle through a couple of points that maybe we didn't cover or various other things about England. And I'm happy to lead off with this one and say that I apologise, DJ Hask. You can go and do a deep house techno DJ set and film it while you dance as much as you want this week because your 92% upper body and 8%, well, 7% leg and 1% bants did the business in Brisbane.
He was unbelievable. I've never seen Haskell play like that. Not for England, not for Wasps, not for Stad when he was there, not for the Highlanders, never. He was, as we said on the Green and Gold podcast, if Pocock or Hooper had that performance, you would be using that to say this is why they're the best players in the world.
Yeah.
He was everywhere. His defence was superb. He got three turnovers. His break and his
sidestep. The sidestep
of Dane Haylett-Petty. Incredible.
Yeah, the last game he had that was that good was in the Millennium Stadium when DJ Spoonie was doing the old...
When he scored two tries.
Yeah, when he scored
two... Even that wasn't
And ran into the post protector, but...
Even that wasn't that...
It wasn't.
He was just superb. He was absolutely brilliant.
The worry is that... Well, and as you rightly pointed out, that took his performances at international level to a whole new level, is will he back that up or will he go back to the Hask we've known?
Well, for me, I'm a bit worried because... There was a few times where he was going for the turnover and he was right on the cusp of either getting a penalty his way or getting a penalty against him. And the decisions went his way this week, which I think might give him a little bit of extra confidence, and he'll hold on for that extra second and he'll try a few new things next week. And I think we could see a bad performance next week.
Maybe
more standard. Those kind of borderline decisions don't go his way and he gets frustrated and he gives more penalties away and he doesn't make yards and he doesn't make the hits. So we'll see.
Well done, DJ Hask. And finally, you look at it and you go, we've had Martin Johnson, Andy Robinson, Stuart Lancaster, and the difference that a proper, wily, experienced international coach makes, making big calls and creating an attitude amongst the players. He's been fantastic.
Yeah. And it was interesting but quite pleasing to see at 80 minutes the scenes in the box where Eddie Jones and Glenn Ella were both celebrating, and rightly so.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of, I don't know, celebrating a win against your own nation. It was quite good to see.
Well,
from an English fan's perspective,
yeah, you know, the English Union are paying him a shed loads of money.
Yeah,
a shed load. So he should be celebrating.
Yes, I agree.
Money well spent.
I think the mark of a man is accepting that you're wrong sometimes, and so you know, I think it's important that you can say you're wrong when you're wrong. And he acknowledged he was wrong and made a bad call picking Burrell by making a change after half an hour. And I say that's the mark of a good man. Any bloke that you know that goes, you know what, hands up, I got that wrong, I'm sorry. And any bloke that in business or in sport can go, I got that wrong, but I'm going to do something about it. I think that's a sign of a great coach.
Yeah, and it was interesting that he made the decision so early, but it was almost immediately vindicated.
Mm. Itoji short shorts, the extra material used for Mako Vanapola's humongous shorts. I don't understand the disparity in the size of shorts between some England players and others. What's going on?
Comfort fit.
Yeah. Mako's are humongous. Absolutely huge. Yeah, well, like we say, we talked about that. You're very quiet there, JB.
Oh, no, sorry. I'm looking at my levels. I'm getting really into microphones at the moment. I'm still actually gobsmacked by exactly how well this England team are doing with pretty much exactly the same team.
Yeah.
And this fairy dust of Itoji too, compared to the last team. It's just staggering. And I think something was alluded to when Haskell got man of the match. I said, yeah, I've been looked after. I feel special on and off the pitch. this should have been happening, to be fair, about 3 years ago.
I feel special on and off the pitch. Something did like he that. Really say that?
Something very similar, you know. Oh, I've been God. Made to feel special.
I don't know how that's, I feel about that.
Yeah, that's a bit unusual.
Yeah, but he also said that he's always kept on his feet. He's been told that you can lose your place at any time. I don't know. This England setup now just seems to be getting the absolute best out of this bunch of lads. And it's a good bunch of lads, too.
Yeah, it is a good bunch of lads. Do you want to hear Haskell's latest Instagram chat?
Do I?
He's been... he just busted in. Haskell had his top off. Standard.
I saw a lot of pictures with Haskell with his top off after this game.
He definitely has distributed far and wide. He knows when his PR value is at its highest. Hold on, don't take the picture. Let me take my top off.
Yeah.
He's busted in on Owen Farrell having a little rub down.
Nah, we have some fun though, don't we? Yeah. Well, we're good mates, Owen and I. Like, he's always doing this. He always pretends not to want to talk to me, but he actually does. Isn't that right, Owen?
You're on the video because you've got your top off.
Whoa, see what I mean? He pops out a little bit, but he's always like, at me, but actually behind closed doors, he's always like, oh, Hask, I love you. Like, we're such good mates. Like, let's go for a coffee. Isn't that right, bud?
Nah.
Yeah, no, he's for no means yes up north. You know, he goes, no, but he means yes, yeah. We're friends. Like, good friend.
He's actually taken on that. Do you remember when he did that spoof video of the...
The stag do.
The stag do guy. What was the phrase he used in that?
The greatest day of my life.
The greatest day of my life. Guilty. Me and the boys. Four drinks in the first hour. Guilty. He's actually taken on that persona in everyday life now. Well, certainly on Instagram. It always surprises me how northern Owen Farrell is.
No, Farrell and Ford.
Yeah.
Very northern.
Do you think there's a certain kickback now because they're at these southern clubs surrounded by, you know, particularly Farrell, although I'm sure he went to private school himself, but, you know, surrounded in St. Albans with all these yahoos.
Yeah.
So the kickback is he's got to be as northern as possible. He's got to eat pies. And
him and Chris Ashton.
Yeah. They've got
stuffing pies down their throat.
You've got to go
walking their whippets.
Yeah, raise a whippet, pigeon fancying, that sort of thing.
I half expected him to start complaining about wildlings in his post-match interview. And I think it's... on the flip side, Jonathan Joseph, is there a more well-spoken, posher-sounding human on planet Earth than JJ?
Good old JJ.
And I can tell you now, in the England kit launch that we went to last year, he looks the best in that kit.
Oh, yeah.
In real life.
Unbelievable V on that body.
Mm. Good arms.
Yeah. We talked at length about England-Australia, so listen to the other podcast for more about that one. But there was much more rugby going on.
Do you want to briefly mention, seeing as we're on England, do you want to briefly mention the two other England games that happened this weekend? The under-20s, which you were at, Tim, and the Saxons, which was on Friday night.
Briefly with the under-20s. So, I've been working at the World Rugby Under-20 Championship. England are top of their pool. They've beaten Italy and Scotland. They've got a big game against Australia, but I think they will beat Australia comfortably. I think they're probably favourites to win the whole tournament at the moment. They have got some really exciting-looking players. I mean, just when you think Harry Mallinder, Johnny Williams were in that back line for England in their game against Scotland. But I just want to mention... Joe Marchant, young outside centre.
Where's he from? I know
Quinns.
The name.
Quinns,
that's it.
Absolutely rapid outside centre. And has a very similar game to JJ.
JJ, yeah.
So he's definitely one that I want to watch out for. And Sale Sharks have got a good flanker in George Knott. Jack Walker, the hooker at Leeds, Yorkshire, Carnegie.
Is he not now signed for Bath?
Oh, has he?
I think he's signed for Bath, which is one of the reasons why they've let Webber go.
He looks great.
Ah, is
he's
that
the
right?
England under-20s captain for the last 2 years, I think.
He looks great, as does the... Well, in fact, the whole all the England front rows just battered Scotland. On the Scottish side, by the way, is there a more... They have some of the most Scottish-sounding names ever. They had a player called Scott Burnside. Fly half Blair Kinghorn.
Kinghorn's a good player as well.
Yeah, he is.
He's a very handy player. He's one of the few players who I thought looked good in a team that was obviously beating 44-0.
But possibly one of the biggest results of the weekend, and I'll move off the under-20s, we can get onto Saxons and then Wales, New Zealand, but Ireland beat New Zealand under-20s. The first ever time an Ireland men's team has beaten a New Zealand men's team.
Is that right?
Wow.
Yeah. Did they count as men's team or the kids' teams?
Well, under-20s.
Yeah. If you're over 18,
yeah, I guess
you're a man,
so.
They're
all playing Premiership clubs, aren't they?
And watch out for... Well, Max Deegan, the number 8, looks great. But the halfbacks and Connacht, the Connacht feel-good factor is continuing with Irish rugby. But in both their games, they've beaten Wales, who were the Grand Slam champions, and they've beaten New Zealand, who were the world champions. And their halfbacks, both from Connacht, Stephen Kerrin's the fly half. He looks like Stringer 2.0. He's little, quick, bullet pass. And Bill Johnston, the fly half, is one to watch.
Good call for the future, yeah. Tim.
Well, actually, I'm having the Welsh under-20s coach in here on... When am I having him? On Tuesday. So if you've got any under-20s questions, we've got Chris Horseman in, which would be good fun.
Wales had Keelan Giles, their winger, flown out. He's gone out, been flown. He scored 2 tries in the opening game, and he's been flown out to New Zealand.
That's
to
a funny one, isn't it?
Because
I know we've got the Chiefs coming up, and that is on the Tuesday.
But I don't think he'll be there in time for that.
They will be, yeah. So he's not going to make the tests. So it's a lot of air miles to put under his belt.
Yeah.
To get him there and then send him home again.
He's only 18, 19?
George North is out, isn't he?
What?
He is. George North's out.
Potentially. Oh, it's hamstring injury.
More than likely. Oh, more than likely.
Did you not know that?
What? Sorry. I saw something like very briefly at George. Oh.
Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, Jay.
It's over.
Anyway, the under-20s championship, if you're anywhere near Manchester, get along. It's really good. But the Saxons, yeah.
Yeah. Saxons on Friday night.
Sippers!
Sippers, there was a few people who impressed. Sippers played well.
Mike Haley?
Mike Haley was superb.
He was great.
The South African commentators, they obviously didn't know who he was before the start of the game. They very much knew who he was after the game. And they were kind of moaning and groaning every time he got the ball because he was so dangerous. He was punching holes everywhere. So Haley was brilliant. Robson, for the 25 minutes that he was on the pitch, was superb.
Yeah, he was. He really was.
He cannot be far behind Kieran Youngs.
Is he still behind Simpson?
No, because he was starting ahead of Simpson for most of the season.
Uh-huh.
So it was an injury to Simpson initially that allowed him to...
What is wrong with Gloucester? What is wrong with them? I mean, yeah, I get it. Laidlaw's the captain. But they've let this guy go who is really, really good.
And
he's really good. He should have been starting. And yeah. They are what? Sixth in the league or something?
No, lower than that, yeah.
Arguably, that James Hook caused Dan Robson to leave because they don't have a kicking fly half. You have to have Laidlaw. You can't give Robson any minutes.
Maybe, but I mean, you know, Hook won a game in the last minute from a kick from the halfway line. He's not a bad kicker. Yeah. I just think Laidlaw's a better one.
Yeah, Laidlaw is a better kicker.
The try Dan Robson scored where he did his hamstring, it was so casual. It looked like...
Stepping inside, stepping outside.
Yeah, it's kind of like schoolboy rugby. I mean, he took his foot off the gas so he could go laterally quicker, if that makes sense. It was impressive stuff. And the South Africans weren't too bad. They had a very good back row out.
Yeah.
I like that Nazim Carr. He looks like a beast.
Prince Nazim Carmed.
Prince Nazim Carmed, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks quite handy.
In fact, the whole back row looked very good. But England have got some real strength in depth now.
Well, the other player who I thought was absolutely superb, who I've not seen a huge amount of this season, was Hepburn, the Exeter Lucid. He scored the first try, but his scrummaging was very good against a massive South African pack.
Yep.
And his work around it was his work around the park.
Because you
normally get, with front rows, props in particular, it's either they're a very good scrummager or they're very good around the park, and you get very few who are kind of very high level at both. Like Gethin Jenkins in his prime could do both superbly.
Mm.
Hepburn almost has that feel, where he's got his early days to be talking him up to that kind of level, but he has the work rate and he has the solidity as well.
Yeah, and he has the mullet.
And he has the mullet. Yeah, very important.
I noticed him quite a lot this season, to be fair, but only in terms of his play around the park. Now, the Exeter scrum is a good scrummage, but you know, at club level, you can get away with less. Sorry, more. I was equally as impressed with him for the Saxons. And if you can continue this, I don't see why he wouldn't get a look at for the England.
He would be probably, based on that, he would be fourth choice for England now. Yeah. But the guys ahead of him are some very, very good players.
But he's probably first choice in terms of his work rate. Because I think the key to Exeter's success is how much production they get from that front three.
Well, just as you're right to point out the difference between Premiership and international rugby, I think it's also right to point out the huge step up from Saxons to first team. Massive.
Yeah, that is fair. Because you've basically got two invitational teams, haven't you? They don't meet up all the time.
You've had a week together, basically. Yeah.
So that's a very fair point.
But it was also interesting to see. So first half, it felt like it was fairly even, but England were more clinical. And they built quite a comfortable lead. And then second half, because they were playing altitude in Bloemfontein, they're playing 1,400 metres up, England just fell apart in that second half, and they almost lost it. And South Africa, came back very, very well. And it was only that, was it Devoto who scored from the James offload right in the last second that actually sealed the victory, which was from a turnover where South Africa could have gone on to victory.
Now,
right, JB, you've got something for us.
I do. I have a Who Am I? So we know the rules. I'll start reading out information. One of you can have a guess, and then the other one can have their guess. And if you're wrong, you can't interject, etc., etc. Right?
Okay, cool.
So, who am I? I started my career at Llanelli. I got one cap. Ooh.
Oh, wow, okay.
I've also had time in Toulon. In addition to playing for Toulon, I have also played for Cardiff Blues.
Is it?
I was born in 1982.
Oh, that changes it slightly. I'm going to guess the younger Quinnell brother.
Craig Quinnell. No, it's not Craig Quinnell.
He didn't go to France, damn it. Did he go? I think he went to France. Oh, I don't know. Damn it!
Might have gone to Toulon.
He made his name with a long-range international kick, which was considered his coming of age.
Oh. Go on, keep going. I think I know who this is.
And is renowned for his outrageous hairstyles. He also
go on, read more.
He also had a small time out of the game with an Achilles tendon injury.
Yes, and a small time out of the game due to a partner who was also famous for singing.
Yes, maybe. In 2009, Mike Turner of the Crusaders, Super League team, asked him to switch codes. Any guesses?
Did he actually switch codes? No, he didn't. I'm going to say Super Gavin Henson.
It is indeed Super Gavin Henson.
The one cap thing threw me. I was trying to think of Welshman who had no caps.
No, sorry, Llanelli, one cap for Llanelli.
Oh, I thought one international cap. God. Oh, well done, Phil.
Yeah, I'm still looking for a player, and I've never found him. And me and Bryn Williams talk about this all the time. Is there a player that's played for every region in Wales?
Well, you're asking the wrong man. Probably the wrong men.
So,
I'm sure there's a listener.
I think Richie Musto has played for like almost all of them, except for one. Mike Phillips has played for all of them, except for one. It seems that Gavin Henson's played for all of them, except for one, which is Newport Gwent Dragons.
Mike Phillips and Gavin Henson do a lot of playing, that's for sure.
That's right.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Right, Wales then. Let's talk Wales.
It's the hope that'll kill you.
What did you mean when you just said finally?
Oh, we've been waiting for this. It was a good game. I really enjoyed this game.
I thought you meant the finally that I kind of my reaction to the game was, particularly the first half, where it was finally Warren Gatland is letting the boys play.
That wasn't my initial reaction now, but I did agree with that sentiment when I was watching it. I thought, that's outside of the England game in the World Cup and outside of the England game in the Six Nations, where they only did it for the last 10, 15 minutes because they had to.
Because they had to, yeah.
It felt like Wales were trying to play a more expansive game right from the start. And it paid dividends. There's not many teams... There's not many teams who go in an away test in New Zealand who go into the halftime break leading.
Well, yes, fine.
So, JB and I on Twitter and in various conversations differ greatly on this. So I'll be interested to see what you think about this one. But I saw this as the start of the end. Well, no, I saw this as Warren Gatland finally putting Gatland ball on the shelf and realizing it's not going to work. And finally, Jamie Roberts was passing. The ball was going through three pairs of hands to the wings early. Liam Williams in the back three were attacking from inside their own half. It was a completely different approach by Wales, and I think all the better for it. A fantastic second half by New Zealand.
So Gatland ball, depending on what your definition is, and this is my definition, the Gatland ball is a system of play which is predicated on hard work, good basics, solid defence. Now, if you do something in the Gatland system and you get a reaction, then the Gatland system will naturally change. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And the great example for me were the kicks in the first half. You've just said it was very expansive rugby.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, you did. You said two or three. Did you say outside of the first 20?
I said it was brilliant to see Jamie Roberts passing. It was brilliant to see the wingers getting the ball earlier. And it was brilliant to see the back three attacking from inside their own half.
So, I mean, if you looked at the first 20 minutes, there were a lot of kicks. I mean, there weren't just a lot of kicks. There were a lot of planned kicks. At one point, he had Dan Bigger in like a sprinter's pose. So not only does Dan know that they're going to kick, The whole pitch knows they're going to kick because the first receiver is in like hands on the floor, ready to bolt. And that, I think that is probably the most effective tactic that Wales had in pinning New Zealand back. And when New Zealand had to go back to retrieve the kick, that's usually when the ball becomes open, because you've got all 15 guys from New Zealand with their backs turned towards the players getting realigned, and that is creating a lot of broken play. Same with the Bradley Davis thing. Bradley Davis just fly at the ball from his own 22 into opposition 10, and that gave him a very good platform. Fundamentally, Gatland ball, which everyone talks about, I think it's often confused with playing a tight game versus playing a wide game. I actually think it's all about playing your basics extremely well, and then from that you can build different layers to your game.
Point, can you name a single top-tier nation, besides France under Livremont, who don't try and do the basics well and then play from there?
No.
Because that is... So what you're describing... So that is not Gatland ball. That is the baseline for every international rugby team, every rugby team, everyone everywhere. The difference in my mind...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
And my fundamental understanding of Gatland ball is it's almost a limited game plan. Yeah, it's playing simple, risk averse is a good way. And what Wales did in that first half was not risk averse. You had Faletau at one stage running out of his own 22, offloading to North, and it worked well. And one of the things, just on this very point, one of the things that you've said previously about Gatland ball is that Wales don't have the capability to do it. And I agreed with that because I'd not seen it. And now we've seen in three instances, both those England games I've said before, and in this game, they actually do, they have the capability to play a slightly more expansive game. And it was, from my point of view watching, it was good to see.
Well, I would, okay, that's all very fair and reasoned points. I would just say, look at the emphasis that Gatland puts on certain things over others. So he's only got a limited amount of time with his players. And I would say, far more time is spent in the Welsh camp working on their fitness because they're far more concerned about a work rate and things which aren't sexy rugby stuff rather than, say, other teams that do a lot more skill-based stuff, a lot more pattern-based stuff, which is why the Welsh game plan is so simple. They simply have limited time and they believe that working hard and the fitness side of it is far more important. And that probably does lead to a more narrow game. The other thing as well is that game plan, I still maintain, is suited to the players that Wales have got. Next year, Wales are going to have a team, and I think only two or three of them will be playing Heineken Cup rugby. That is it. So let's not kid ourselves that these are world-class players, or they'd be qualifying for the Heineken Cup. It's just a system which allows them to play the best possible way. Now, if they identify a weakness, and I do think they genuinely thought All Blacks were weaker around the centres, well, it makes sense to target that. But fundamentally, they've not done anything different. They've just done the basics well. They've worked hard. They've identified a weakness and stuck with the game plan.
I'm really surprised to hear you say that you think that there was no difference between that Wales that played in New Zealand and the Wales that we have seen under Warren Gatland.
No.
The results
are different. I mean, the actual product will be different at the end, but the process to get to that end result is exactly the same.
I completely disagree.
I think there was a conscious effort to play a bit wider, play a bit more through the hands, offload a bit more. It appeared to me as a conscious effort. Not only did it appear to me, but Warren Gatland actually in his post-match press conference.
Sam Warburton in his pre-match chat said we're looking to play a different type of rugby.
You find me...
Read every newspaper article that's there in the Sunday papers today, JB, and I think you are kind of a lone voice suggesting that this is what Wales have always done.
This is just... All you're doing is falling into the clickbaity mentality of the national press. It is exactly the same process. Yeah, the emphasis might be different, but it's not. My point is, it's not the end of Gatland ball, and it's not this huge huge sea change that everyone else thinks it is. Fundamentally, the most effective weapon was their kicking. You know, their kicking and their kick chase. That isn't expansive rugby.
I disagree with that. That was the most effective weapon.
It was for the first 20, and as soon as the All Blacks adjusted to that,
Faletau try was not from kicking. No. It was through going wide.
After 8 minutes, Faletau and Liam and Reece Webb's try from Liam Williams, both broken field offloads.
If you do break the line, clearly you're going to be playing differently. If you are kicking and they drop four back, then you will play differently. I mean that isn't rocket science. But yeah,
so what you're saying from what you saw, they didn't. Their decision making and their strategy and intent to play was no different from any of the times in the Six Nations, any of the times in the World Cup.
The process to get there is the same, which is emphasis on basics and fitness, and that's all it is.
That's the same as
an implementation of a tight game plan.
That's not
your version of Gatland ball.
Well, then every international team plays Gatland ball. Then
yeah, every rugby team.
Yeah, which is why it's a farce. The whole Gatland ball thing is a farce.
Well, no, but you were the one 2 weeks ago after England saying, "Yeah, you see, this is what we do. We have to go back to Gatland ball. We have to just do. We have to do all the risk-free things that we can control.
We have to do all those basics well to allow us to play rugby. That's what you've got to do." And that's exactly what the alleged Gatland ball is. Well, it's just basics done well with good fitness.
I'd be interested to hear from other Welshmen if you agree on this one or not.
Can I just mention the bit about Gatland saying he wants to play more rugby? Please God, find me a director of rugby who was interviewed and came up with the words, "Do you know what? We wanted to play less rugby." That's not what they say. They never say we want to play less rugby, because it's a thing to influence the fans and the officials that we were the team playing rugby.
You frequently hear directors of rugby saying we wanted to play a controlled, measured game. We knew our scrum and our set piece.
We were the team trying to play the rugby. Anytime that there's a decision going against them, we were the team trying to play the rugby.
Tim, so you want to open this up to a Welsh fan? fans. Yeah. I want to open this up to anyone who's done psychology as a studied psychology as a student, because this is, in my mind, a perfect example of cognitive dissonance.
Oh no, here we go.
And anyone listening, if you know what that is, it'd be interesting to get your perspective on that.
Tim did psychology.
I did. What do you understand it to what do you understand it to mean in this sense?
It's if a viewpoint rejects your own, or if evidence rejects your own viewpoint, you ignore that evidence, is the basic fundamentals of cognitive dissonance. I think JB at the moment is a prime example of that.
It's like discomfort experienced by realizing the facts are wrong. You feel entirely uncomfortable, and so you either retreat and entrench.
Well, the only way
you deny.
The only way you would actually know is if you knew the Welsh game plan, and if it was just ripped up from previous sessions, which I don't think it was. And we all know that the premise of so-called Gatlin ball is mostly fitness.
Taking no risks and Jamie Roberts crashing over.
It depends what the game plan is for the opposition. That's all it is. They do stick rigidly to a game plan. That is undoubtable. Whether it be going wide or it be going down the middle. That's it. That's all that Gatlin ball is. But as for the game itself...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just heartbreaking. Heartbreaking.
I like your comment before when you said it's the hope that kills you.
It does. I knew it'd happen. I knew we'd be competitive for a little while, and then we'd just fold, like unexpectedly competitive. And you go, hang on.
Yeah.
Oh, there's something in this. Yeah. This isn't bad.
And part of that, again, going back to the South Africa Ireland, how much of it was Ireland forcing mistakes, or how much of it was South Africa being terrible? That first half, particularly, New Zealand made a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes, a lot of basic handling errors. And how much of that was them being rusty and them not playing together, and some new additions to the squad, and how much of it was Wales putting pressure on them?
Well, can I say something else? Do you know when else they were rusty?
The first test against England.
Correct.
2014.
Yeah. So I'm holding up no hope for the next test or the test after.
Well, interesting. It was the first two tests. Friend of the podcast, CJ.
Mm-hmm.
Who you described last week as knowing nothing about rugby. He made a very good point that it was the first two tests England were actually competitive in the 2014 tour, and it was the final test where New Zealand really cut loose.
Yeah.
And again, you talk about the point, in the last 4 months, England have spent 2.5-3 months together as a group during the Six Nations and in the build-up to this, whereas New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, they will have only been together for 2 weeks in the past 9-10 months.
There is one international team, of course, we've seen nothing of.
Japan. Oh, no, Japan beat Canada.
Yeah.
Scotland, we've seen nothing of.
Oh, yeah, where are Scotland?
They're travelling to Japan.
Right, that makes that's about right.
I think that'll be a good test.
Yeah, we'll be
a good test. Who's the one you were going to say, Jay?
Well, France.
Well, France are still playing the top 14. Yeah. Racing beat Toulouse yesterday. Who plays today? Montpellier hosts Cast tonight.
Meat grinder.
But that is the kind of knockout. It's the last six. It's the knockout stages for the semi-final next weekend and then the final the following weekend. France actually travel this week to Argentina, which means they'll have all their internationals from their... The top four teams won't be available for the first test. And
what
all the internationals
mess.
From the top two teams won't be available for the second and final test.
It is such an utter mess.
So they're going to play a test series in Argentina against Argentina with most of their... their internationals who play for the top teams missing.
Isn't it incredible? I mean, I actually watched a tiny bit of the Racing game last night. Racing versus
Toulouse.
Yeah.
And it is literally as exciting as watching one of those professional butchers' meat grinders, do you know when they throw up all the meat and they run it at the lowest speed possible? That's how exciting watching French rugby is compared to the internationals.
And they say you don't want to see how the sausage is made. It's kind of like just show us the picture of the top 14
just
winner.
I don't
want to see the process. Just tell us when Racing have won it. Or
a
whatever.
Low electronical groan from a machine that produces high torque.
I was dual screening that and the England game. Football game, and normally I will be solely focused on the rugby if I'm watching rugby and football at the same time, and it just didn't do it for me. It was just, it's just dull. It was just kick, kick, kick. I mean, Racing 21 points from 7 penalties. Toulouse at least did score a try through Gael Ficou with 15 minutes to go, but it wasn't pretty.
Both the football and the top 14 weren't things you should have watched, and they're definitely not going to get you going. What would have done it for you would be the highlights of England-Australia again, and you can find those on Pornhub, apparently. just search Barely Legal Itoji and Haskell and Brutal.
I didn't like the little bit of stick I got from my northern accent on the last Green and Gold podcast where I wasn't here to defend myself.
Well, we want a list of Australian names which sound so Australian.
Well, like...
Med Tamua!
Tamua. Tamani.
Scott Fardy. Joe Tamani.
But I was thinking you could do...
Can we get an index?
we could get some kind of index. I was thinking of doing... Northern Rugby League fan reads England team sheet, England Rugby Union team sheet. You'd have like...
That would be good.
Marco Vunipola. Dylan Hartley.
Yeah.
Dan Cole. Good strong northern name.
I'm up in Bradford at some point next week. I might just do like a vox pop. See what I can find.
Yeah.
Say this name. What?
So. George Cruis. Is it Cruis?
Billet Vunipola.
I will say good. One last thing about the Wales game, and you can do whatever you want with this unholy mess. Is it Nairavolo or Navarro? What's his name?
Waisaki Naholo.
Naholo. Is going to join the pantheon of All Black great wingers.
He will, if... Going forward, he is unreal. Halam Amos...
Have you outside? Yeah. Okay.
Halam Amos uses the 16th defender in the touchline, shows him the outside. Thank you very much.
Different league.
If you watch him when he's not got the ball, if you watch him in defence, he is so lazy. There was times where the ball was kicked through by Wales and he was just jogging back. He should be sprinting back, get there first, clear the lines, and he's just ambling back.
Mm.
So I think, well, if I can see it, someone in that New Zealand team coaching staff will be seeing it.
He's so dangerous.
He's unbelievably dangerous.
Did Sivi Vaatu and Rokokoku and Lomu, were they all big workers in D?
Maybe not so much.
I think you'll fit in nicely.
Maybe.
So here's a question for you then, and sticking with Wales, because I think we've all highlighted that Talupe Faletau was outstanding.
Agreed.
Superb.
And was right, would be right up there at the moment. On the strength of that performance anyway, like you say, form recently, maybe not. But him and Kieran Reid, to me, look like the two best eights on the planet. So I would go... There you go, Lions jersey is yours, Talupe. If you were picking a Lions jersey, because Billy Vunipola's had a lot of plaudits, and Jamie Heaslip showed up well, as you pointed out earlier, who gets that Lions shirt if you were handing it out today?
On yesterday's performance alone, okay,
Yeah.
And if we knew what they were going to do on Friday, what they did on Saturday, I hate to say it because I've been rubbishing him for God knows how long. I think Jamie Heaslip was the most impressive eight of the weekend.
Wow. He was incredibly impressive.
Yeah. Maybe not doing eight stuff.
Just all round, yeah.
But I wouldn't pick him for a Lions test.
For the same thing, if it was yesterday, I would go Faletau.
Mm-hmm.
Faletau played superbly. I also thought the Australians really closed down Billy very well. They've obviously done their homework on how destructive he can be. And so he had very few opportunities. If I was going for the past 6 months, including... club performances and the Six Nations, it would be Billy for me.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Any comment, Tim? Any difference in opinion, or are you
just playing with that blue tack?
Playing with a little bit of blue tack, and whilst I was thinking and listening to what you were saying, I kind of agree with all of it. I would give the shit to Faletau, and it was against New Zealand, it was that slight... His work rate is unbelievable. I know Billy Vunipola has done a lot of work on his work rate, but
hang on, he's saying the Welsh team work hard.
Faletau is absolutely everywhere, but it's that extra. I mean, well, you've got, who are we going to be playing? We're going to be playing against New Zealand, aren't we?
Yeah.
And I think Faletau's the guy to take on New Zealand, but Vunipola offers that ball carrying, and he's if you were doing it like they were players on a video game, you'd go Vunipola, ball carrying 98, Faletau, ball carrying 90 or whatever.
Yeah.
But Faletau offloading, Faletau loose running.
His defense.
I tell you what,
he consistently tops the highest tackle percentage as well. He very rarely, he makes a huge number of tackles and very rarely misses a tackle.
Yeah, and my favourite Faletauian moments from yesterday was Liam Williams had no one to pass the ball to and he ran onto the ball going backwards. Do you see that?
So yes,
Liam Williams passed into space, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you know the way you run onto the ball? Well, he ran onto it going towards his own try line.
Yeah.
You turned around and then put George North into space.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah,
just one thing that will be slightly concerning for Wales in their back row, as we're talking about the back row.
Mm-hmm.
Moriarty.
Yes.
I was pleased.
I thought he showed up well, but you're going to tell me he didn't.
Well, I thought he played quite well. And looking at the statistics, he attempted 24 tackles, which is a huge number. Mm-hmm. 24 in a game is massive.
Yeah, it's
it would be double anyone else in the Wales team. And double anyone else in the New Zealand team, but he missed 8 of those 24.
Well,
8 missed tackles is...
It's not as serious as you think, actually, because I think a high missed tackle count, as long isn't too serious, which sounds perverse, because it shows you're there to try and make the tackles. Now, if your tackle count is like nearly 30, it stands to reason that you're going to miss some because you're working hard. The guy that concerns me is a guy that gets 3 tackles and 3 complete tackles.
Thomas Francis, 0 tackles, 0 carries.
Yeah. That's one that concerns me.
That is pretty much exactly... Yeah, that is exactly Thomas Francis. Yeah, defending stats. Oh, 1 run. How many metres for Thomas
3.
Francis?
2.
1.
Oh.
So, no tackles, no passes.
When I said 3, I just said deduct Tim's 2 from my 3. That's what I meant.
1 run, 1 metre made.
Disastrous.
So you talk work rate.
Yeah.
And Jamie Roberts, only 4 carries. How many metres made?
4 times 3, 12.
Tim?
I saw 12 yards in 1 carry, so I'll go 42.
Well, you're closer, Tim, 34. 34 from 4.
I don't like this at all.
Almost 9.
This is not the Wales that I love.
And how many passes?
He had 4 passes as well.
Interestingly...
Well, hopefully George North's injury will put an end to all this nonsense.
Couple of offloads as well.
Go back to what I'm comfortable with.
A couple of offloads. Incredible.
Yeah.
What I think was interesting was that... I can't remember the last time I saw Jamie Roberts substituted where... It wasn't a substitution for or replaced where it wasn't a replacement that was basically, oh, let's just take him off, keep him fresh because we've won the game already.
Or an injury.
Now, can I just say this, Tim? If Wales start without Jamie Roberts...
I'm not suggesting they...
No, but well, if they do, I will then go a complete 180 and say Gatland ball is done. As in that narrow type of play. That will be the key. If Jamie Roberts gets dropped for Scott Williams...
Let's talk about that because it's kind of a theme across several of the internationals when you saw Ford Farrell working a lot better than Farrell Burrell, and you saw Jamie Roberts go off and Scott Williams come on in his place. Is this the model? And Australia had two big centres. They missed that second ball player.
And it will be interesting to see if they bring in Lia Leofano, who is a second ball player. Because in the past, they've always had Lia Leofano or Gitto or Matt Tamua or Kirtley Beale, who can all do that auxiliary fly half role.
Could you see a situation where Scott Williams would be a better option than Jamie Roberts?
No. Not really. No, I can't really. I think the bigger the game, the better Jamie Roberts plays, generally speaking. He's had 2 outstanding games against the All Blacks last two times that they've played. But I think he got man of the match against Sonny Bill.
Just an unbelievable man.
He is.
Yeah.
Just as a human being, he's just incredible.
There may
man.
Be lads out there with more skills than him.
Maybe.
Yeah, there might. It's a possibility. I'm not saying there is. It's possible.
It's very big of you to admit that it's possible.
There might be some guys out there who have better physical attributes in terms of speed. But I don't think that losing all of his leadership, all of his experience And that big man, you know, he's got something about, big games, Dan Biggar and Jamie Roberts, which fills you with confidence. That, Jamie Roberts might even take it to a new level. Like, man of the series in South Africa, a great Lions tour last time around when they won. Just, I would never take him off until he literally can't play anymore. Never.
It does feel like you lose a little bit. And like, maybe Wales don't have the options, but we spoke previously, if we were selecting a Lions tour, selecting Jamie inside centre is a statement of intent as to the way you're going to play.
Mm.
And not having that second ball player, because as good as Liam Williams was, Liam Williams was outstanding. He's not a second ball player like Alex Goode can come into line.
It's funny you should mention that. Alex Goode is on the tip of my tongue then, because if Wales had an Alex Goode, we couldn't have a Liam Williams. But maybe that does solve a kind of distribution problem.
You've got two, not quite as good, but you've got Anscombe, who can play 15, and you've also got Matthew Morgan.
Yeah, they're not Alex Goode, mate. Neither of those guys can. I wouldn't let them carry Alex Goode's boots.
Liam Williams would be all right. He can just carry on riding his invisible horse. What is going on with his bow legs?
He was superb.
He was great.
I mean, the only thing at a sharper angle than Liam Williams' run are his legs.
I thought it was interesting.
Hashtag rickets.
I thought it was interesting with some of Wales' kicking game. So Dan Biggar is the best fly half in the world at the kick and catch.
Yeah.
The best fly half in the world. Unfortunately, he was coming against the best player in the world at receiving those kick and catches in
Ben Smith.
Bean Smith.
So that was a really interesting little duel. Those two going at it.
Ben Smith did get the better of one of the kicks, but in general, I quite like the tactic, and I would do it again. I'd do more of it.
Yeah.
Because if they are more skillful than Wales, and I think it's fair to say they are,
I'd go with that.
The great equaliser is the high kick. And I tell you what, George North is horrible underneath the high ball.
Yeah,
absolutely horrible.
Has he always been like that?
I got no idea. It did stand out, though.
It really stood out.
It's like, oh, look, the ball's going to land into the... Just get in the air, George. Get in the air and use your height and try and just tip it. Mind you, that'd be a yellow card, I think. If he tipped it backwards into touch, that's a yellow card. I've seen Carney being there.
Deliberately pushing.
So he's jumping up for it. He's going to tip it and it goes into touch. That's a yellow card.
I was with just on that one, I was working at the Under-20 Championships, and there was some... The guys from Man City were there, and they were running like the big screen, all the rest of it. And the last kick of the game in one match, what was it? Anyway, Wales. Wales had a penalty kick from halfway. They were 1 point up against Georgia, and there was just more than a minute left of the game. So if they kicked a touch, the game would have to play on. So they took the shot at goal, took the full minute. And the guy and I said, the only question is, what if it doesn't go dead? And then the football guy went, well, just take the full minute, then deliberately kick it to the side. And that would get a pen against, right, for unsportsmanlike conduct?
I think it could do. I'm not sure if the rules are clear on this.
What do we want to do?
Right, so Wales had a penalty kick on the halfway line.
Yep.
In the Under-20 Championship. There was about a minute and a half left of the game, so the kicker took the full time.
Yep.
To take the kick.
Rightly so.
Took the penalty kick, and the only thought I said, they went, oh, well, it's game over. The people with me said, oh, that's game over, whatever. To which I said, well, no, it's quite a long kick. He might not kick it dead, which means Georgia could catch the ball and attack. And then the guys that were with me, football fans, generally speaking, said, oh, well, why doesn't he just take the full minute and then kick it into touch sideways so he knows it'll go out? And I thought that would get a penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct.
I'd penalise that.
I would penalise that.
Yeah, because he said he's going to have a shot at goal.
Yeah.
So I think his best option is just to kick it out on the full.
But if you're on the halfway line and you're having a shot on goal, you might not. I know you.
You know what? To be fair, that's probably not that hard for them. The hard bit is
accuracy.
The accuracy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I reckon Harry Mallander could do it.
Yeah, probably.
He's a massive lad.
Yeah, he is.
He played fly half for England in the
20s.
He played inside centre last week.
Yeah.
And fly half this week.
Do you know that, like, wags, for want of a better word, they go through phases? And, like, the number one accessory is, like, a little poodle which goes in a handbag or something like that. is the number one accessory for directors of rugby now to have a teenage superstar fly half.
Yeah, fly half.
Preferably related to you.
Oh, yeah, no, it's got to be your son.
Oh, yeah, son. Yeah,
it's got to be your son.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm waiting to see which other lethal fly halves have been sired by the directors of rugby from around England.
Well, because they're not always they're not always playing for their director of rugby. Or like, there's a lot of famous sons who are fly halves, like Hastings of Bath.
Hastings' son, yeah.
Grayson is at Northampton as well, another option for them.
Ah, well, I think they do this to give themselves some bargaining power for when they go for their next job. I mean, I can get you a fly half. Who?
Yeah.
My boy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Mike Ford, I'm sure it has something to do with Mike Ford landing the job in Bath that... You know, he knows Joe, George fairly well.
He knows Joe as well.
Yeah, I mean, Joe's a nice lad.
if we drop down to the championship, I can get us Joe.
I mean, would you want Owen Farrell to play for your team?
Yeah, that would be all right.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, wouldn't mind.
As soon as Sexton was out injured, Andy Farrell was pushing for Owen to be starting ahead of Paddy Jackson.
I mean, like, if the Sale director of rugby job came available, I'd give Andy Farrell a good look, particularly if they didn't have a fly half, because I reckon he could get one.
Yeah, yeah, interesting.
And he'd be back up north.
Yeah.
Oh, break news for you. I've got it on good authority. Kyle Eastman will be signing for Sale.
That's been a rumour doing the rounds recently. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
It could be a very good signing.
Very good. Which I wonder.
Because you go from two seasons ago when you had Tuitupu and Leota.
Leota, yeah.
Very, very route one. Centre partnership. You then drop Sam James in, who's got a bit of an outside break, good hands, good kicking. You then drop Kyle Eastman in, and all of a sudden you've got an exciting...
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
And what you lost maybe in the... Although, as we've previously said, Sip has kicked more than any other Aviva Premiership fly half, but what you lose in the potential unpredictability and flair of someone like Sippers, you get AJ McGinty and he's a steady, much more steady player, but you have that little spark outside him.
Yeah. I tell you, the nice other thing that, which I really like about it is allegedly Sale work almost entirely with Paul Deacon doing patterns of play. Who will understand patterns of play that Paul Deacon's going to put into practice more than Kyle Eastman, who's not only come from rugby league, but worked with a director of rugby from rugby league and now going to a head coach, which is from rugby league. Mm. It just makes too much sense.
It does. Makes complete sense.
Oh, I like
and
it.
Battle going to be replacing Kyle Eastman with?
Well, they've got Bowden, haven't they? But they've lost Devoto and Eastman, and they've got Bowden. Dan Bowden.
Bowden. Potato.
Well, apparently... They're going to be raiding Toulon for a player.
Tommy Taylor?
Nope.
Maxime Moz.
That's correct. So that is the guy apparently they've got lined up to replace him.
That would be an interesting signing. I've never really rated Moz. He looks like he should
Wolverine.
He looks like he should be incredible. No, you're thinking of...
I'm thinking of...
Medard. Maxime Medard. He looks incredible, Moz. I've never really seen him have that incredible game.
No, I'd love to see him come over. He'd be only the second Frenchman in the league next season.
Yes, after Big Louis.
Louis and his quadzilla. I can't wait for that.
So a friend of mine, a guy I used to play with at Sedgley, a guy called Louis McGowan, who played at Rotherham, played Waterloo, Rotherham.
Number eight?
Second row. Who's, I don't actually know how old he is. He must be 36, 37, maybe slightly older. And he's always played for Lancashire at the end of the season. And so at the Lancashire Awards dinner, he got like a recognition of commitment to the cause kind of thing. Recognition of playing more than 30 games, which when you consider Lancashire play, if they're lucky, they play 3 games a year.
It's a big deal.
It's a very big deal. On the award that he got, they spelt his name Lois. Which is Lois McGowan, like Lois Lane. So thanks for your 12 plus years of commitment and serving the county.
Well, not to sound too bitter, but we all know where long term commitment gets you in rugby, particularly in Lancashire. Cheers, lads.
Technically, we're not in Lancashire.
What?
It's Greater Manchester is a county in its own right.
But we don't have a rugby team.
It doesn't have a rugby team.
It doesn't have a rugby team.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, you're quite right.
Shall we do the previews and get out of here?
Yeah, well, we've just been talking about Wales, New Zealand.
Do you know what I was going to do? I was going to ask, what are the matchups? But we know what the matchups are. They're the same again.
Yeah. Apart from France, Argentina, rather, and Argentina's narrow win over Italy.
Hey, Argentina's under 20s looking really good.
Looking good and playing good.
And playing good, yeah.
What's the chronological order of these games, Philip?
Chiefs host Wales on Tuesday, 7:35 a.m. Set your alarm clock.
Chiefs.
Or just get into work a bit later.
Interestingly, just while we're talking Chiefs, jumping over to Highlanders, there's lots of talk about Joe Schmidt being approached by Highlanders and he could be off there.
Really?
That's interesting. Hang on, aren't Highlanders pretty well set?
I know, and also, I don't know. Well, I'm wondering, and this is part of what I see. I see Joe Schmidt and Warren Gatland auditioning at the moment for Steve Hansen's job in 3 years' time.
There is a bit of that. But Highlanders have got Jamie Joseph as their head coach, haven't they?
Well,
is that who the head coach is?
Yeah.
I've just gone on him.
There was a story this weekend saying about rumours.
Is there something about him going to Japan?
I thought Jamie Joseph was the number two, or wasn't the number two to Dave Rennie.
We don't know. Someone tell us.
Okay, fine.
Coach profiles.
Anyway, sorry. So Wales play Chiefs.
Chiefs.
Yes. It'll be interesting to see. There might be some players auditioning for the proper test on the Saturday morning.
Yeah, there may be, but Chiefs will win this. I don't know. I mean, I want the Chiefs that I know would win it because I watch them in Super Rugby. But I guess it's not the Super Rugby team, is it?
Yeah. Well,
they're not going to be playing Michael Leach and everyone because obviously they've got more important things to do, and probably he'll be away with Japan. So
yeah, Leach might be away. Like Damian McKenzie's in the All Black squad. Cruden's obviously All Black squad. So there'll be players missing, but I reckon that they'll still have a fairly handy team.
You
back Wales to win.
Yeah, give me Wales just because I'm not sure what kind of product the Chiefs will put out.
And then what do we have?
Then we have South Africa A hosting England Saxons in the second of their two-match series.
I reckon Saxons will smash them.
Now, where is this game? Because altitude did play a big factor last time.
And they still win.
And they did win, but it was close. So if it's low altitude, give me Saxons. If it's high altitude, give me South Africa.
Good call.
Just give me Saxons full stop and give me in by 15 points.
Interesting.
Nice.
Then Saturday morning, the big games, 8:35 again, and unfortunately, I'll be on a plane to Portugal during this match. Terrible mistake.
Yeah, it is.
New Zealand host Wales.
Let me see. Why am I thinking about this? It's New Zealand. It's going to be.
Obviously, New Zealand are going to win.
But what's the ratio of points? Is it? I reckon same ratio of points for every one that Wales score, New Zealand will score two.
Yeah, and I can see a similar kind of pattern in that Wales will be competitive for 50-60 minutes and then New Zealand's skill and fitness will blow them away.
Their second half was outstanding.
They cut out the errors, they picked it up a gear, they were good.
I think it's that old, everyone's been saying it since rugby's ever started. When fatigue sets in, that's when core skills start to degrade, and the people with the best core skills can therefore maintain them at a higher level when they tire. So it's not that New Zealand are, because lots of people say, oh, they are the fittest team in the world, and maybe they are, but I don't think it's so much that New Zealand are the fittest team. I think it's their core skills are of such high quality that even when fatigue sets in, it's still better than most.
I think that's a fair. I think it's, you can't look at one in isolation. You have to have them both, and that is a very good point. So we're also in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yep.
Then hopefully I'll have landed and be in the villa for England, Australia, or Australia, England at 11 a.m.
Okay.
British time.
I think this is another English win.
Now
I think I'm going to go for Australia levelling it up.
I think
Haskell can't play like that two games in a row.
I think he can.
I'd love if he not could. Only
can I'd love he, it if he could.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he can.
I don't think he will.
Unless Australia come with a brand new strategy, which probably Eddie Jones has preempted anyway, I can't see him doing it.
But the way they played for the first 20 minutes and the last kind of 10-15 minutes, if they played like that for the full game, Australia would have won comfortably. They were two tries to nil up inside 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And had all the ball, all the territory, all the possession. Were the only ones making inroads. And then it did turn around. So I'm going to say Australia. And I actually think the Pocock loss could actually be a gain.
I've got a funny feeling about that too.
If they bring another ball carrier in, who can bend the line, who can get the more front foot ball, more quick ball, because that was the key. When they were getting that quick ball, they were finding Folau in space outside the 13 channel, and because it was fast, England hadn't properly realigned, and he was finding props to run at.
As the green and gold guy said, they don't have anyone that can bend the line outside of second rows in Skelton.
Cliffy Palu and McCalman less so.
Houston possibly coming in. Yeah. Sokopi Kepu coming in, I think, will be good.
Houston wouldn't scare you.
No, it wouldn't scare that.
It's good player,
that England team. Yeah,
but then in Premiership, in when you're looking at the Aviva Premiership, I'd sort of go, well, Haskell, Houston, about the same kind of level.
I wouldn't. They're completely different players. I'd say
they're completely different kind of players. I'd say they're a similar standard.
But in terms
they're
of
kind of,
I don't know.
But Haskell had a world class game, and I wouldn't say in the Premiership he does anything more incredible or special than Houston.
The thing about Haskell is like, because he's got such a good basis of work rate, whether he plays badly or well, you've always got that potential that he can have a world class game. I mean, my prediction last week was Haskell and Robshaw will be a great asset for England because they don't do the same as Pocock and Hooper. When they actually get to the breakdown, they drive over, they clear everyone out. So actually, they're the perfect antidote to those jackals, which then makes you think, oh, are they the perfect antidote to the new guy that they'll bring in?
Possibly
and that,
not.
I can't answer.
Mm. So I'm going for Australia, just...
Leofano and Kepu, like you say, big changes that could come in.
I would like to see England bring in Goud. I don't think it'll happen, no. But I think England will win.
Okay.
I think Australia just...
I'll go with that, but it will be less than a score.
But then England never won in Brisbane, and
I'll
be delighted to be wrong once again.
Then Japan hosts Scotland 11:20. I'm not sure if that'll be on TV.
No, I'm going to say Japan will win that. Because I want them to.
Can I just say?
I don't actually believe that.
Can I just say Japan have lost comfortably in both under-20s games, but their scrum. Super. Was awesome.
Weird, isn't it, if Japan become the new Argentina?
Yeah. Could happen.
And they beat Canada last night, and Canada traditionally have a pretty solid scrum.
I mean, they've got... I tell you what Japan have got, if they play them, is two-thirds of a world-class back row. In Mafi, who... People in Bath said he was outstanding until he did something naughty to a physio. But I can't say the next bit I was about to say. Actually, I won't continue on that. And also Michael Leitch or Michael.
Yeah,
Leitch.
Michael Leitch. Yeah, Leitch. Very good. And then the final game.
I'll go Scotland.
I'll go Scotland as well. Actually,
I'm going to go Japan just because I want it to happen.
I think that would actually be a really good game. I'd love to watch that. Mm. And then final game. Final game on this list is South Africa, Ireland.
Yeah.
There's also Argentina, France, but I'm not got time.
I have no
that.
Idea who will win the.
Oh, that's on the Sunday. Sorry,
I have no idea who'll win Argentina, France. No idea.
South Africa, Ireland. I'm going to go for South Africa to correct some of the wrongs from last week.
And me,
I can't see Ireland losing this.
I can't see them being that heroic again. And South Africa were almost a bit of a blunt. They were a blunted instrument.
Right. Are South Africa missing? Because everyone's saying it's a weakened team. Who?
They're not missing. They're missing players from the world who played in the World Cup.
Is that what we're talking about? Players that retired and gone, or not available?
Players like the Duplessis brothers. But Adrian Strauss is now the captain.
He's, yeah. So one of them won't get in.
Vermaelen started
because they can still bring
France.
In like three or four outside players, and they do. They bring in Vermaelen. They've brought in Lowe.
Yeah.
So it's not a big deal. Yeah. It sounds a bit like sour grapes.
What you got to think is that South Africa are going to get the hairdryer treatment, not just from their coach, but from an entire nation.
Yes.
They're fanatical fans.
Yeah. The other thing as well is the team that are doing best in South African conference are the Lions. So if you've not heard of these players, it's because all the other players aren't playing as well as the players who play for the Lions, who are now getting a shot.
Faf de Klerk.
Yeah.
Who played at 9.
Exactly.
But I fully expect them to be fired up and there'll be a reaction. I expect them to win.
I reckon Ireland will win this.
And then on the Sunday, 2 a.m. on the Sunday, we've got United States host Italy.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
That's a really good little tour that they've got going on.
Yeah, Italy to hopefully they're working their way up. So Argentina,
USA,
Canada would be a good way of doing it.
Oh, that's really good.
It's not a bad little tour, that. I don't know if they are actually playing Canada the following week.
I would like to see one of the major nations do that, or at least the Saxons.
Yeah, Saxons used to always do the Churchill Cup, didn't they?
Yeah, or do it the other way around, which is Canada, United States, full-strength Argentina team.
And you could even do like a midweek South America combined with like Uruguay, Chile,
yeah,
Brazil.
And we could go
Brazil
watch it.
A bit of sevens.
Yeah,
get that sorted, schedule makers.
And then the final game, which will be after our next podcast because it's a kickoff at 20 past 10 next Sunday evening. So one to watch just before we go to get ready for work on the Monday, is Argentina hosting France.
Right. Wow,
now,
that is
what?
Like...
Scrum porn.
Yes.
Well, you'd have thought so, but...
Well, on previous years, but... Maybe
yeah, but this isn't really a France team. Right. It's like, what would they be called, the French second team? If England, the Saxons, what the French? The Gallics or something?
Yeah.
Or the I don't know. But there's something else. This isn't the French team.
Yes, this will be a half French team, I think. Although, during the Six Nations and in the World Cup, a huge number of their players were taken from Stade Francais.
Based
on their performances last year, the Stade Francais haven't made... I think they were third or fourth
from
the bottom.
So, most
this
of their
year.
Players were taken from Stade Francais.
Yeah.
Based on their performance this year, most of their players will be taken from Stade
Francais
again.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Very good.
Get in. Right, get us... followed on and get your thoughts in on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. Get us subscribed on iTunes, Acast,
buy some razors,
wherever. Buy some beautiful top of the range.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Award-winning Cornerstone Razors, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. Get in.
Cheers, boys.
In a bit.